Tuesday, October 6, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, 12 Pacific Rim nations agree on a Trans-Pacific Partnership Pact.
And some of the assessments that we've done on terms of the actual impact on individual countries does point to significant gains for countries like Vietnam.
Renewed fighting breaks out in Kunduz, Afghanistan. And we'll hear the latest release by singer Selena Gomez. It's all ahead. After years of difficult negotiations, the 12 Pacific Rim nations belonging to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact announced an agreement Monday. It lowers or eliminates trade barriers, sets labor and environmental standards, and regulates behavior in commerce, investment, and intellectual property and patent protection. White House spokesman Josh Earnest calls the pact a major foreign policy achievement of the Obama administration's four-year rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region.
Essentially an agreement to cut 18,000 taxes. These are essentially import taxes that are placed on American goods that are shipped to some of these fastest-growing economic markets in the world. And this enhances opportunity for American businesses and American workers. Just to give you some examples, you know, American poultry in some of these countries is taxed at up to 40%. American soybeans are taxed at 35%. These are all tariffs that will be slashed if not eliminated. In some of these countries, there's a 59% tax on American machinery. And some countries actually maintain an import tax of 70% on American auto products. These are tariffs that are cut or eliminated over a period of time that will open up access to overseas markets for American goods and services. And the president continues to be confident that if we can do more to level the playing field for American goods and services, that American businesses and American workers are going to win. And that's a competition that the president welcomes, but it's also a competition that's going to be good for economic growth and job creation here in the United States.
However, the agreement, which affects nations comprising about 40% of the world's gross domestic product and about one-third of all trade, faces an uncertain future in the U.S. Congress. But to IHS Global Insights chief economist Rajiv Biswas, who spoke with International Edition's Victor Beatty from Singapore, the agreement is great news for the Asia-Pacific region.
And some of the assessments that we've done on terms of the actual impact on individual countries does point to significant gains for countries like Vietnam in particular. It could really make quite a big difference to their economic growth rate. And even for countries like Japan, some of the assessments done by the Japanese government of the impact of TPP, that it will provide a significant boost to their growth rate over the medium term in which it's going to be implemented. Some of the other beneficiaries in terms of a significant impact on their growth rate will be, I think, Malaysia is another beneficiary because it will get enhanced access to the North American market. So I think there's a lot of winners amongst the member partners. But of course, we should also, I think, point out that there's going to be some trade diversion effects on non-TPP countries such as China and some of the other Asian countries.
What does that mean?
What we're going to see is that the winners, such as Vietnam and Malaysia, will get enhanced access to crucial markets such as the U.S. and Japan. And what that means is that some of the other countries in Asia that export to the same markets in areas such as textiles and electronics may actually suffer because producers will shift their production facilities to countries like Vietnam. Certainly in the textiles and garments industry, there's quite a lot of concern in countries like Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, which are also big hubs for garment production, that now production will shift towards Vietnam. And we've seen a lot of evidence that actual textiles and fabrics companies are starting to move their production to Vietnam in preparation for the TPP implementation, because it really will result in quite a significant reduction in the tariffs for Vietnam because they'll get duty-free access to the U.S. market. But I think the main point is that this is very good news for the global economy in general, because we've seen that through the World Trade Organization, negotiations for trade liberalization have been stalled over the last decade or so. So I think the TPP does represent a significant step towards trade liberalization in the Asia-Pacific region.
One analyst suggested that the TPP will provide real new energy to the U.S. policy of rebalancing toward Asia and boost the narrative for U.S. engagement in Asia. And will this agreement provide impetus for other Asian countries to join TPP?
I think it is important as part of the overall U.S. pivot towards Asia, and it's certainly been an important plank of President Obama's administration. Our forecast is that Asia will be the fastest growing region of the world in the next two or three decades. And I think from the Asian country's perspective, now that the TPP is implemented, I think we are likely to see other countries wanting to join up over the medium term.
That's IHS Global Insight Chief Economist Rajeev Biswas in Singapore. Meanwhile, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe Tuesday welcomed the TTP, ushering in a new Asia-Pacific century. He expressed the hope China would eventually join, thus making TPP even more strategically significant. Well, for more on this TPP agreement, I'm joined by International Edition's Susan Yaki. So, Susan, what has been the reaction on social media?
Hi, Sarah. Topsy.com says the Trans-Pacific Partnership has gotten 3,100 tweets just in the past 21 hours. On the web, The Guardian calls the TPP the biggest trade deal in a generation, which would affect 40% of the world economy. However, it notes the pact still requires ratification from the U.S. Congress and other world lawmakers. It says the agreement is a major victory for U.S. President Barack Obama and quotes him as saying, "This partnership levels the playing field for our farmers, ranchers, and manufacturers." The Economist reports the Trans-Pacific Partnership Pact is the biggest and deepest trade deal stuck in years, calling it an ambitious and contentious free trade pact. The Economist writes, the full implications of the deal are not yet known, since TPP was negotiated under a thick blanket of secrecy, saying it will be weeks before the agreement's 30 chapters are translated and published in full. Newsweek says TPP got a rocky response in Washington from U.S. lawmakers, indicating it has a long, difficult road ahead as Congress considers whether or not to approve it. It quotes Republican Senator Orrin Hatch as saying, "I am afraid this deal appears to fall woefully short." CNN Money writes that critics say the trade deal will shift more jobs and business operations overseas as U.S. businesses seek to benefit from lower wage workers in developing economies. It says proponents feel it will make it easier for U.S. businesses to sell overseas, opening up overseas markets. The New York Times reports that environmentalists are praising the wildlife protections in the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, calling them groundbreaking. It says the groups believe it will strengthen international environmental enforcement agreements and could go a long way toward diminishing illegal trade in some plants and animals. Fierce Biotech says the U.S. reportedly had to step far back from a hotly sought-after provision that would have guaranteed market exclusivity for new biologics by 12 years throughout the vast region. Sarah?
Thanks very much, Susan. That's International Edition's Susan Yaki. New fighting has broken out in Kunduz, Afghanistan. I'm joined now by reporter Ayaz Ghul, who is in VOA's South Asia Bureau in Islamabad. Ayaz, what is known currently about the situation in Kunduz and renewed fighting there?
Well, things have been volatile over the past 24 hours because once the Afghan forces recaptured the city and the Taliban retreated from Kunduz, we have seen over the last 24 hours hit-and-run attacks from the Taliban fighters, especially in the central square of the city and around the police headquarters in Kunduz. And that fighting was quite intense this morning when a bunch of Taliban fighters riding motorbikes and with armed with RPGs, they started attacking security forces positions in parts of the city, and then they just disappeared within the civilian population. So this has created a very serious challenge for the Afghan security forces who are trying to clear the city of insurgents so that normalcy could return to the city, because the fighting over the past few days has really caused serious damage to the infrastructure, and it has become very difficult for living. I mean, it's, according to aid workers, it's been declared as not fit for living. The conditions are such in Kunduz. So it's quite a serious situation also for residents in Kunduz, because they have been confined to their houses most of the time, and there's serious shortage of food, medicine, and other supplies. And Afghan authorities in Kabul are trying to send in these emergency supplies to the city. But again, they are also, their effort is also hampered by the new fighting that has erupted in Kunduz.
What have Afghan officials said publicly about this situation in Kunduz?
Well, we just heard there was a press conference by both the Defense Ministry and the Interior Ministry. And the Defense Ministry spokesman Daulat Waziri told reporters a little while ago in Kabul that they are facing problems in clearing the city of the remaining Taliban insurgents. But then he said that these fighters are actually hiding in civilian homes, and it is not possible for security forces to storm these suspected hideouts of the insurgents, because they're trying to avoid civilian casualties. But on the whole, one in Defense Ministry spokesman was confident that security forces will soon overcome these remaining fighters in Kunduz. But as I said previously, Afghan officials have been making these claims over the past few days repeatedly that they have secured the city and that they are in control of it. But what we have seen this morning is clearly the city remains a war zone, effective war zone, where life is especially has become very difficult for the residents.
Thank you very much, Ayaz. That's Ayaz Ghul reporting from VOA's South Asia Bureau in Islamabad, Pakistan. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Americans throw away about 25 million extruded polystyrene foam or styrofoam cups each year. Unfortunately, polystyrene waste makes up a major portion of the countless tons of plastic debris in the ocean and in landfills. It takes hundreds of years before the plastics biodegrade or break down. Now scientists at California's Stanford University and China's Beihang University say that the mealworm may provide a natural tool to help solve this plastic pollution problem. The American and Chinese researchers found that these tiny worms can actually live on a diet of styrofoam and other forms of polystyrene. The scientists also found that microorganisms in the worms' bellies biodegrade the plastic after processing nutrients from it and produce waste that appears to be safe to use as soil for crops. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear the latest from singer Selena Gomez. On a leafy campus near Cambodia's capital, Phnom Penh, a group of 50 school children are benefiting from a bold educational experiment with a dual aim: to turn out youngsters who can improve the country and to develop a model program that can be replicated internationally. Robert Carmichael reports from Phnom Penh.
In 2012, staff from the Liga Learning Center interviewed hundreds of children across Cambodia to find the most promising students. Eventually, 25 boys and 25 girls were selected. Each received a scholarship, full board and tuition. 13-year-old Say Ha was one of those chosen. His impoverished parents were thrilled.
They support me a lot because they wish they could go to this school when they was my age. Because when they was my age, it required a lot of money and working to get to school. And this school, we pass a scholarship and it's free.
Most of Liga's 50 students are, like Say Ha, from poor families. In Cambodia, with its weak education system, to be born poor is to have little or no opportunity. The Liga school wants to change that for these 50 students, for another 50 students next year, and in the long term for the country. US businessman Trevor Guile, who co-founded the school with his wife, was in Cambodia last week and told VOA that the aim is to help people help themselves rather than just give away money. That means those who attend the school also pledge to give back.
We have essentially promised to these children, come to us, we'll see you through your high school years. Now, in return, and one of the reasons that we are so focused on making sure they identify with their own culture, is that it's going to be a poor investment if we turn out this brilliant young person who's ready to take the world by storm, and they leave Cambodia and never look back. That will not be the desired outcome, but not by a long shot.
Although education in Cambodia is slowly improving, the well-regarded education minister has been in the job just 2 years and has a mammoth task ahead. Teaching methods at government schools, for example, revolve around rote learning of specific subjects with a focus on passing exams. Guile's deep pockets mean Liger is ahead of other schools. Each Liger student, for instance, has a laptop. They engage in project-based learning and experiential education aimed at helping them reach their potential. Liger's country director, Dom Sharp.
Experiential learning is a huge part of what we do here. The students here spend a lot of time out of the classroom, out of Phnom Penh, and sometimes even out of the country. So that's very different. You know, learning by experiencing something, you're never going to forget it.
Sehar, for instance, worked with a team of Liger students to research and write a book about Cambodia's wildlife. The book will be published in January, and it and another book the Liger students wrote about the economy will be distributed in schools nationwide. Other Liger students have entered a robotics competition in Singapore or recorded podcasts about Cambodian subjects. Ultimately, says Guile, the Liger Learning Center is about more than helping Cambodia to progress.
Some people have from time to time thought that this might be a rich guy's pet project. It's absolutely not the case. We went into this intending to create a model that could be replicated outside of Cambodia, virtually anywhere. And in order to do this, we have to be fiscally responsible. The model has to be self-sustainable and to make economic sense.
To date, Guile is pleased with progress.
So far, it's working in spades. And so I'm quite confident that we can show the results that we promise we can deliver. And at that point, it's only logical, it only makes sense that other like-minded individuals and organizations around the world are going to say, hey, I like this idea. I think we can work together and expand it.
Guile expects that by 2025, there will be at least 10 Liger schools in the region and beyond. By then, this class of 12 and 13-year-olds will have long since graduated and, if all goes according to plan, will be using the skills they're learning here to help Cambodia move forward. Robert Carmichael for VOA News, Phnom Penh.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is International Edition. She's one of the most popular entertainers today. And following a public romance and breakup with Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez is out on her own with a new release from her latest album. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald tells more in the studio with International Edition host Jim Stevenson.
Selena Gomez is somebody I even know. A singer, actress, fashion designer, and she's got a new song out.
That's right, and Selena Gomez has her second solo album, Revival, coming out October 9th. In many ways, you could say this is a debut set. I think she sort of regards it that way. This is going to be her first album on the Interscope label. All of Selena's other albums, both solo and with her old band, The Scene, were done on Hollywood Records, which is a Disney-owned company. And of course, Selena has been part of the Disney stable, or had been part of the Disney stable, since she was a young teenager. She did TV shows and movies, and so she was very much, you know, the clean-cut Disney girl. And then for the last couple of years, I guess she's occupied a place in the public imagination as Justin Bieber's on-and-off girlfriend. So she was in the tabloids. And she says she's sick of the noise. She's sick of other people defining who she is and what she's all about. And she's really looking to break out with Revival.
Well, a good way to do that, if you just want to get away from everything, is get in the studio by yourself in front of a microphone and belt out a good song.
That's exactly it. Here it is, the second single from Selena's upcoming album, Revival, out October 9th. This is called Same Old Love.
I'm so sick of that.
She's worked with some great people on this album. Her new single, Same Old Love, features co-writing from Charlie XCX, a British pop star who's gaining a reputation as a real song crafter for other acts, as well as a star in her own right. And even Max Martin had a hand in this album. And Max is a Swedish songwriter-producer who is, at this point, the most popular and successful pop songwriter on Earth, even though most people don't know who he is.
Right. I was just going to say, probably one of the most incredible talents you never knew about.
That's exactly right.
And I was reading that Selena Gomez was also looking up to Taylor Swift as a role model. There's another tie-in there. Taylor Swift, of course, very successful on her own and answers to no one but herself and her fans.
Well, yeah, Selena is part of Taylor Swift's girl posse, and those two may work together at some point in the future.
The possibilities are endless. Ray McDonald, as always, a pleasure to have you in the studio. Follow Ray on Twitter at Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Jim.
The music of Selena Gomez. That's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. recently welcomed India to Washington for the first U.S.-India strategic dialogue. Speaking about the dialogue after meeting with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi in New York, President Barack Obama said, "We've elevated our ties. We've committed ourselves to a new partnership between our two countries." During the strategic dialogue, the U.S. and India discussed how to grow their already strong economic partnership. Annual trade in goods and services between the U.S. and India has grown nearly fivefold since the year 2000 to just over $100 billion. There is potential for that figure to reach more than $500 billion in the years immediately ahead, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Bilateral trade is also poised to grow substantially, as are employment opportunities for people from both countries. With regard to security matters, U.S.-Indian cooperation continues to grow. Both countries have agreed on a new 10-year defense framework and also on a shared strategic vision for the Asia-Pacific and Indian Ocean that stresses security, maritime law, peaceful resolution of disputes, and economic connectivity across the region. The U.S. is one of India's largest defense suppliers, and both countries are partnering to develop and produce advanced defense systems. On energy, both countries are trying to grow economically in ways that are green and clean. "What is clear to everybody," said Secretary Kerry, "is that the choices one makes in order to grow green and clean do not mean a choice between growth or the environment. Both can take place simultaneously." Indeed, the U.S. is providing $30 million over 5 years to scale up renewable energy integration into India's power grid. On health, India and the United States are striving to end preventable maternal and child deaths in developing countries. Meanwhile, the U.S. and India have begun a new discussion on oceans conservation and are also building an important partnership in the crucial area of internet governance. "Together," said Secretary Kerry, "we can help to shape a world that is more secure, peaceful, and prosperous than it was before our efforts came together."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.